This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
Well, good morning, Roger, and thank you for that. We're coming up to 10 minutes after 5 o'clock here on this Saturday morning, and we say welcome to our weekly get-together that we call the Saturday Morning Show, where we talk about America and the world's most basic industry, producing food to feed a growing world population. But agriculture touches the lives of everybody, and that's why we spend time talking about issues faced by producers of food and fiber and energy and all of the other things that come from the soil. Good to be with you here on this Saturday morning, not appreciating the weather, of course, because as you may have heard earlier, today is the day that we produce the Christmas television show, This Week in Agribusiness. That's our weekly program that Max Armstrong and I do across the country. And we were planning and are going to Michigan, to Frankenmuth, to do the Christmas show in the St. Lawrence Lutheran Church. They have a great musical program and choirs and so on. But it's going to be a challenge getting there. There's no question of that. Planning to fly Air Orion? No, that's out of the question because there's ice up in those clouds, and we don't want to be flying a Cessna 210 into ice and clouds anywhere. The only thing that'll put an airplane down faster than ice is to run out of fuel. And we don't like to do either one of those. But we do have lots to talk about this morning here on the Saturday Morning Show. Max will be along a little bit later to talk market strategy as we are in the period that many of us refer to as the trading doldrums of the season. Not as much trading taking place between Thanksgiving and the New Year's holiday, but of course there is. And there is a lot of information coming out. There's a story that is, I think, going to bother corn producers across the country, and I'll get to that story in just a moment. But I do want to say again, thank you to the Illinois Farm Bureau for coming to Chicago to hold their annual meeting at the Palmer House in downtown Chicago. And most of them have gone back home, but maybe some of the ladies said, why don't we stay and do some of our Christmas shopping before we go back? Because that's something that they like to do in conjunction with the Illinois Farm Bureau Convention. So President, Rich Gebert, was reelected, but a new vice president was elected at the Illinois Farm Bureau meeting, Brian Duncan of Ogle County. And he is elected to a two-year term as Illinois Farm Bureau vice president. He currently serves as the Ogle County Farm Bureau president. And he and his wife, Kelly, raise corn, soybeans, wheat, hogs, and cattle on their farm near Polo, Illinois. When they raise something else, four children on their farm in Polo. Meanwhile, Rich Gebert has a degree in agriculture education and a minor in animal science from Southern Illinois University. And he and his wife, Nancy, and their son, Kyle, operate a corn, soybean, and wheat farm in Randolph County, Illinois. He has served as the Illinois Farm Bureau president for the past 4 years, previously served as vice president of the Farm Bureau from 2003 to 2013. So congratulations to the new vice president, to the re-elected president of that Farm Bureau convention in Chicago this week. It's 14 minutes after 5, and we're going to meet a man whose life will change dramatically come the end of January. We'll do all of that when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. As we approach the end of the year, this gentleman is going to find next year a much busier time. Kevin Kester, president-elect of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. And you'll take office when and where?
I'll take office at the end of our annual meetings in Phoenix at the start of February. And so for the balance of 2018 till the following convention, I'll be NCBA president.
So let's learn more about the incoming president. Where do you operate? What do you do?
Sure. I'm a fifth-generation California rancher. My family's ranched on the central coast of California, southern Monterey County, a little ranching community called Parkfield. Population 18, at least that's what the sign says. I'm not even sure where all 18 people live, but my family's been here since the 1860s, and I'm proud to say I have a couple of very young grandkids who potentially represent the seventh generation of my family to potentially ranch in the central coast of California, so we're pretty proud of that.
There's something about you cowboys in the West. You keep it all in the family, don't you?
We try to, especially in California with our regulatory pressures. It's a challenge, but
yes.
We try to be successful where we can.
What do you see as the biggest challenge for you and your operation and other members of NCBA?
Well, for our operation, I think we're just a typical representation of ranchers across this country. It's regulatory pressure. The cost of compliance for new regulations can be overwhelming, and we're on the tip of the pyramid, I think, at times to where we're close to being put out of business with new regulatory rules that come into effect all the way from the local level to the state level to the national level. Add all those up, and every bureaucrat has their own little tunnel vision of what they're responsible for, but at the end of the day, when you get multi-agencies making all these new rules and passing regulations, it's pretty costly to stay in business.
As a cattleman, how many government agencies get involved in your ranch operation?
It'd be pretty depressing if I took the time to count them up, but especially in California, like I say, it's a lot because we have local county regulatory matters, and then we have regional water quality, air quality boards that we have to follow their rulemaking, and we have state water boards and state air boards and state government and the multi-agencies, and add on to the federal level, it's many dozens of agencies that I have to deal with just to stay in business.
And then you have to deal with the marketplace, and you've been on quite a roller coaster over the past year or so, haven't you?
We have. Market volatility has been a top of mind over the past couple of years, especially at the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. We've worked really hard with the Chicago Mercantile
right.
Exchange and others, agencies in Washington, D.C., to try to find out and see if we could manage this volatility if possible. And we found out, and I think the CME found out, that it's easier to say than do.
Yeah.
But we have tweaked things a little bit at the CME to where we hope it has a little bit of an effect on volatility. And it seems that the marketplace, we're in a new day and age, and unfortunately that's probably a new norm, so to speak, the volatility that we may be forced to live with. But with that being said, we're still trying to tweak things to dampen those volatile effects where we can.
And then let's talk about the impact of your work in the foreign markets. You've done a lot to promote beef exports.
I'm excited about the talk about trade. It's been a success story and continues to be, and it's going to be top of mind going into 2018 as my year of leading the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. This past year in 2017, we got formal access back into China with U.S. beef for the first time in 14 years. And so I was one of the few guys that got to go over with the Secretary Perdue and be a part of that opening ceremony.
Good.
And that was a good experience to see the Chinese economy over there, and it gave me a greater appreciation of our potential of what we can do in China with U.S. beef. The Chinese love our products, so we just need to develop those business-to-business relationships over the next few years and build that market up. We've got a lot of things going on with NAFTA. Canada and Mexico are two of our biggest trading partners for beef, and it's our job to make sure that we don't get harmed by any NAFTA renegotiations or modernization. Right now, we have no tariffs or quotas for Mexico or Canada. pretty hard to improve on that.
Yes.
So we want to make sure that we don't suffer any unintended consequences by the administration doing something that might harm our beef access.
I remember when Clayton Yeider, special trade representative, went to Japan and got that market opened. And I'm glad to see that we're getting the same thing now in China. Is it a little slower picking up in China?
Well, yes, it's going to be a slow because we've been shut out for so many years. And the trade agreement with China wasn't by any means the perfect agreement.
Right.
But we wanted to get our foot in the door and get official access and then build upon that like we did in Japan.
Yeah.
We started off slow in Japan, and now it's our biggest market, even with our high tariff still.
Yep.
We still have a 38.5% tariff really? On all beef in Japan, and we've done so much, it triggered a safeguard on frozen beef, where now for the rest of the fiscal year in Japan, which is in the next spring of 2018, we have a 50% tariff. So we have to compete against Australia specifically. But with all that said, Japan's still our biggest market. It's grown by 30% this year. And so if we can get into a bilateral agreement with Japan, now that we're out of the Trans-Pacific Partnership Trade Agreement, and get those tariffs down, boy, it's unlimited access. I can only imagine what our
right.
success into Japan will be on top of our success now. So we've got a lot of good stuff to talk about trade. And I'm excited about it.
Kevin Kester, we'll see you in Phoenix the end of January.
Looking forward to it. It'll be here before we know it.
President-elect of the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. 25 minutes after 5 here on the Saturday morning show. A snowy morning, not a blizzard by any means, but lake effect snow particularly that's affecting parts of the Midwest. So keep an eye on driving because you could run into unexpected slippery spots this morning because of the light snow that is falling. So Roger Badish will have that forecast for you again in just a few minutes on the 5:30 news. Well, a story that hit late this week on Thursday on my Reuters computer headlined, White House pressures big corn to meet on U.S. biofuels policy. And, of course, ever since ethanol made its first appearance on the energy scene in the United States back in the 70s, they called it gasohol, and then it became ethanol. And it's using corn and soybeans in the case of soy diesel and corn in the case of ethanol. The oil industry has been fighting the ethanol biofuels industry tooth and nail, and not very fair at times. And now they held a meeting this week with some of the senators who come from states where there's a lot of oil refining and oil drilling going on. And I get the feeling, and let me share this story with you, and if you're a corn producer, you might want to be concerned about this one. President Trump's administration called two lawmakers from the U.S. Corn Belt on Thursday to convince them to join talks about potential changes to biofuels policy to ease the burden on oil refineries. That's according to a spokesman for one of the lawmakers and a source that's been briefed on the matter. And the effort is the clearest sign yet that President Trump is seeking to mediate the long-running dispute between the U.S. oil industry and corn growers over the Renewable Fuel Standard. That's RFS. It's a law requiring refiners to blend increasing volumes of biofuels like corn-based ethanol every year into the nation's fuels. And the oil industry wants us to feel sorry for them after all the price maneuvering that's been going on since the 70s in the oil industry. But they're saying this law is not fair. It's putting them out of business. Ethanol interests, and that's corn growers, have vehemently opposed any changes. But White House Chief of Staff General John Kelly Thursday called Republican Senator Chuck Grassley, coming from the corn-growing state of Iowa, leading supporter of the biofuels industry, and he called him to discuss the possibility of a meeting. Secretary of Agriculture Sonny Perdue called Republican Senator Joni Ernst, also from Iowa, on the issue, and Trump and senior cabinet officials met with 9 Republican senators from states with oil refineries on Thursday, including Ted Cruz of Texas. Some of the senators said after the meeting that Trump was interested in having all sides on the issue work together toward a solution. The spokesman Michael Zona added that Kelly, in his call to Grassley, reiterated the president's unwavering commitment to ethanol, the RFS, and Midwestern farmers, and officials in Ernst's office and at the White House did not respond to a request for comment. But a new meeting could be scheduled as early as this week. The RFS was introduced more than a decade ago by President George W. Bush as a way to boost U.S. agriculture, to cut energy imports, and to cut emissions, and has since fostered a market for ethanol amounting to 15 billion gallons a year. Refiners oppose the RFS because they say it costs them hundreds of millions of dollars a year in blending and regulatory expenses while propping up demand for rival fuels. Well, it'll be interesting to see if the meeting is called and if it is held in the coming week and what comes out of the meeting. Not going to be easy to satisfy the oil industry, the oil refineries, and corn growers and ethanol producers, many of them owned in cooperatives put together by farmers, and it's become quite an industry across the United States. So keep an eye on that one. We're at 5:30, and this is Chicago's very own. And thank you, Roger, for everything but that forecast, because that grounds Air Orient for today, flying over to Frankenmuth, Michigan, so we'll have to find another way to get there.
Yeah, I'm sure you will be very careful and get there in a proper amount of time and safely.
Thank you. We'll do that coming up on 24 minutes before 6. Here on the Saturday Morning Show, Max Armstrong standing by to join us with his special guest to talk markets. And is it the holiday doldrum trading season when things tend to quiet down? Well, the trading population tends to leave for the holiday season early in many cases. So that sometimes leads to lower trading volume, particularly in the grain market and in the livestock futures market. Coming up, we're going to remind you that you'll be getting something in your mailbox, if you haven't already, that you need to pay attention to, so stay with us for that. But right now, we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion Samuelson, and today we'll talk about learning about agriculture. We're getting ready for the holidays around the Samuelson home. We are expecting a lot of visitors, so the last thing we want to worry about is plumbing problems. So we'll have a bottle of Wink Hair Clog Blaster handy to keep our bathroom drains running clean. Safe on all pipes and septic systems, Wink Hair Clog Blaster pours through running, standing water, breaking down hair and soap scum. Check out all the fine products at wink.com. That's W-H-I-N. Looking back over the years, looking back over the decades, Max and I have attended many farm and agricultural events, from commodity group annual meetings to policy group like Farm Bureau annual meetings. And sooner or later, before any of those meetings have come to an end, we've heard something like this from farmers and ranchers: we are not getting our message across to city people to help them understand why we do what we do and why we use the technology we use. We have got to do a better story of telling agriculture story. And I hear that at just about every meeting. But last week in Arizona, I attended a gathering of agricultural producers and heard a similar concern, but expressed differently. I attended a gathering in Phoenix last week to help farmers and ranchers in Arizona learn more about their counterparts in the different commodities produced in Arizona. 3 years ago, Mark Killian, the director of agriculture in the state, decided to begin the Arizona Ag Round Table. And last week, on one day, for a full day, 300 agricultural producers from Arizona came together to hear about the challenges faced by other producers in the state and to work more closely together to solve what little differences inside agriculture there might be, but to better understand that when you're in agriculture, whether it's farming or ranching or specialty crops, you're not alone in challenges. On the program were representatives from, I think, every field of agriculture in Arizona: dairy, cotton, alfalfa, cattle, produce, horticulture, pork production, ag production. And they spent the day listening to the challenges faced by producers of those products. And they learned a great deal. Those also in attendance found that while many of their problems were common, not all of them were. For example, border crossing of cattle between Mexico and the United States, a challenge for cattlemen in Arizona. The invasive species problems, plants that have taken over pastures and deserts in Arizona and destroyed feed supply for cattle out there on the ranch. I think all of the people there learned something they didn't know about their counterparts in agriculture. I know I learned a lot, and I came away from the meeting thinking we ought to do this in every state, bring farmers together to get better acquainted and maybe speak with a more unified voice on behalf of agriculture, because we still have the infighting like big farms versus little farms, organic farms versus conventional farms, and on and on and on. And we need to get rid of that infighting in agriculture. As a matter of fact, I came away thinking every state in the country that has a bountiful agricultural economy should put together something like the Arizona Ag Round Table. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. We're coming up on 18 minutes before 6 o'clock, and we're going to be talking markets here in a moment after this on the Saturday morning show. Naomi Bloom from West Bend, Wisconsin, a market analyst with Stuart Peterson, is a bright young lady when it comes to watching and analyzing markets. We have talked to her before here on the Saturday morning show and our weekly TV show, This Week in Agribusiness. And this week, Naomi sat down, and this was the greeting from Max Armstrong.
It's great to have you back. Happy holidays to you.
Yes, thank you. Same to you.
We've been decking the halls around here, and we're in that holiday spirit, to be sure. Looking on the calendar, it's kind of a light report calendar, but there are a couple of them that loom out there that could be of interest before the January tally is reported there, when we get a bunch of reports, including, wheat acreage and final production numbers on corn and beans for 2017. But in the week ahead, USDA has a chance to adjust numbers a little bit, update us on some numbers. Coming up on Tuesday, I think there's a report.
Yes, that's correct. And traditionally, the December report doesn't do too much in the way of changes for yield or acres or anything like that. There'll probably be some slight tweaks on the demand table. Specifically, I think what the industry is watching is for corn, will ethanol numbers even go a little higher yet for corn demand for ethanol? And then on the soybean side, will the export numbers be pulled down? Because our export pace is a little bit behind where the USDA was thinking we'd be at. And then on the global front, what we're going to be looking for is if Production numbers in South America might actually be down because of the weather issues that are developing there, and second crop corn in Argentina is supposed to be a little bit lower, and even Brazil. And so there's some things to be watching for, and exports there too. Brazil soybean exports are ahead of pace.
On your Twitter account the other day, you posted an interesting chart, a pie chart that showed where soybeans are growing in the world. And it reinforces why many of us, I think, the first thing in the morning wonder what's going on with South American weather. Because truly, you look at, what, half of the world's production of soybeans come out of those two. Well, I guess you throw in Paraguay as well. But Brazil and Argentina are the big producers. And that's a big, big chunk of that pie.
Oh, for sure. And that is why during these winter months, the market trades every single weather forecast that comes out of South America. And it's big swings with the market prices because of how much production potential they have there. And in La Nina years, Argentina, when they have that, which is what's going on right now, production can be down anywhere from 5 to 18%. So I think with the new hybrids out there, because we learned that lesson this year in the United States, but will their production be lower? Because our global demand is so strong, if there truly is a production hiccup down there, that'll result in higher prices around the world. Nothing that's going to just send that market sky racing high or anything like that, but it's enough to keep it supported.
You beg an interesting question there, I guess I would follow up on. Is there the possibility, very soon perhaps, even for the next planting season in the United States, where all of the worry about the weather, about getting this crop in the ground and getting it started, finally the market gets to a point where traders say, wait a minute, we're going to get a good size production anyway? All of this worry about not getting a crop planted is worry about nothing. I mean, you look at what happened in the United States in 2017.
Yeah, and that is, I totally agree. I think we are almost getting to that point. When I talk with farmers, what it sounds like that the new hybrids are able to just hang in there and survive, and then as soon as they get a quarter or a half inch of rain, boom, they can just grow a foot almost overnight. And so that's what the science has done. And we really may be getting to the point where, unless it's a 2012 drought where there's no rain and high temperatures, any 2-week period of dry weather might become a non-event.
You talked about the possible slackening of exports, that USDA might back away from those numbers a little bit. Is that because we've continued to see a strong dollar? Is that a part of that story too?
Yeah, I would say that's a component of it. The other part of it is that for some of our marketplace, Mexico has said, well, just in case NAFTA, this whole agreement goes haywire, they've opened their doors to South America to be importing. The other part of it is that the South American production had been so strong that they are now just able to be a bigger market share on the global front. And so they are just naturally taking business from us. What is interesting to keep in mind is that in January and early February, that is oftentimes when the United States will pick up a lot of our exports to China ahead of their Chinese New Year, because that is when the Chinese market will know for sure what's actually happening in South America, and do they then need to come hot and heavy to the United States just in case it looks like there's a production issue down there. So I haven't given up hope to where I think, oh, we're never going to, you know, have these strong exports again. I'm giving it a few more weeks. But you might see the USDA lower the demand front for exports because we are behind.
Some people have said we may see a weakening of the dollar as we get into 2018. That certainly would be friendly, at least to a minor extent, would it not? And encouraging some buying from us versus, you know, depending on what the currency relationship is with the real in South America.
Yeah, absolutely. And just the thing for listeners to remember is that when our dollar is weaker and lower, it makes it cheaper for other countries to import our products. And so the dollar has been hanging around the 94 level, 92, back and forth in that area. And with new policies coming ahead with our administration and potentially with the new tax plan, the dollar is at a point where it could probably have some movement. And if it is lower, good news for our exports.
What's your opinion of the degree to which the market is prepared for perhaps some bad news on NAFTA? You know, there's been angst since way back early in the year about what could happen to the North American Free Trade Agreement, mindful of the fact that we sell so much to Mexico, especially hogs and corn, but grain, sorghum, and other products too. Canada is not an insignificant market for us. If something were to go south there and all of a sudden the president would prevail over the recommendations of some of his cabinet officers, including the Secretary of Agriculture, and say, we're going to scrap the North American Free Trade Agreement, what's the market reaction immediately in your mind? What would it be then 2 or 3 weeks down the road?
Yeah, that would be the black swan if Mr. President Trump were to poo-poo NAFTA. The market reaction would be, oh, no, we're never going to export anything. Then, therefore, more supplies in our country. Therefore, our hog prices go lower. Our grain prices go lower in a short-term reaction. Longer term, you'd have to see what the rhetoric is along the way. But once those demand destruction fears are out there, oftentimes it can take months to potentially a year to just fix things. So I'm very hopeful that everyone gets along and we don't have any major discord. And that is a topic that I watch every day and do my Google searches on, any additional news that's coming out and what other countries are thinking too. It's so important.
It's interesting, though, to ponder, given the fact that markets tend to overreact. And think back to the election last year, November of 2016. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. You know, the market took a terrible tumble and immediately bounced back and hasn't looked back since. I mean, it's continued to climb over the course of more than a year here. Markets do overreact sometimes, and then the reaction can be very strong sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great point, too. So be ready for either scenario to fall from the standpoint of if the market reacts and things prices go lower, know immediately what you're going to be doing with grain that you have at home and when you would be selling it. And on the flip side, if we can get a positive reaction and prices can work higher from any means, then use that as your selling opportunity for any additional unpriced grain as markets work higher. But I think you brought up the biggest point, that that might be something that is the biggest fundamental factor to be watching as we head into the new year.
Your farmer customers, when there's a little bit of a bump in prices, are they loading up the trucks?
For beans, yes, they have been. And the rally that we had this week met a lot of bean selling for anything that was left with old crop. And we even got going on the new crop sales as well, because the November contract was up near the 1025 level.
Yeah.
So it's at a great place to get started. Of course, the corn market hasn't given us anything. It's just stuck in that 10-cent range. It probably is going to be there for a little while until we get a better feel for maybe any weather issues in South America and things like that. But yes, on the rallies, beans especially, cash sales have been made.
Ethanol demand, it continues to look quite strong, as a matter of fact. We don't see any weakening of the ethanol demand, do we? I mean, in terms of buying ethanol out of these plants and serving the export markets, for example?
Right. Exports have been very strong for ethanol. China has been importing more ethanol because they're trying to up their production numbers. And on the USDA reports, that's the one category that has stayed constant. I wouldn't be surprised if we saw more growth there for corn, for ethanol. It is the one thing that the administration has said we're not going to mess with.
And I guess what comes to mind here, too, is we have another pig crop report coming up the end of December, another sign of what's going on with the livestock herd in the United States. You folks will be watching that number, too, no doubt.
Yeah, we're looking for bigger production numbers there for the hogs. Some people are thinking that we're going to see an additional 2 to 3% growth in production. Now, it's been helpful, of course, that we have the new plants that have come on, and so that is helping. And our exports for October hogs were up 10% from the year prior. And I really, for the month of November, was trying to figure out, why is this hog market rallying when we have so much supply? The hogs that are coming to market, they're heavy. And so it is that export market that carried us. And so now we have a new month. We've got the holidays coming. Some of that holiday demand has already been met, and we've had a little bit of a setback in the hog prices. So it'll be very curious to see where the hog numbers end up being at in that December report coming up. I think at this time, any rallies for hogs are an opportunity to sell just because the production numbers are there. But then I think, too, of a few years back during the winter months when we had the PED virus so bad, where that just really, you know, wiped out some of the herd from the standpoint of the babies that were born. You know, they got the flu. It was essentially what the PED virus was. And I wonder, I'm sure we have better practices now to make sure that that doesn't happen. But what if there was another outbreak like that? So, yeah, lots of going on in the hog market right now.
But your reminder of the strong pork exports is also a reminder of the fragile nature, perhaps, of that market, too, relative to some kind of a NAFTA decision that could be negative. So
you're right.
One more reason to watch what happens with NAFTA.
Yes, yes, very true.
Naomi Bloom from Stewart Peterson in West Bend, Wisconsin, offering some interesting information on how you deal with the markets from now through the end of the year and then into the spring season. Our thanks to Naomi for joining Max this week to talk markets. We're at about 3.5 minutes before 6 o'clock. I said, watch your mailbox because there's something very important besides Christmas cards coming in the mailbox this month. We'll talk about that in a moment. Before we say farewell this week, the Ag Census is underway. The census that started in 1840 and is conducted every 5 years to get a complete picture of American agriculture. The survey forms are going into rural mailboxes all across America this month. They have to be completed by February 5th. So keep an eye out for the Ag Census form coming to your mailbox very soon. Well, thank you for joining us. Thanks to Ben Cortez for handling the dials and all of that kind of stuff. And we hope you stay with us throughout the day and night here on WGN Radio Chicago. We're at 6 o'clock, and along with Max Armstrong, I'm Orion Samuelson saying thank you for listening.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.